This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. Delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We're going to be talking about trapping. We're going to be talking a little bit about fencing when it comes to maybe a different way to look at some traps. And then I'm going to put my Braveheart face paint on a little bit towards the end. And I'm going to do that for a purpose that our world's just gone freaking nuts, guys. I mean, it really has. And just a few things off the top of my head I thought would be pretty cool that you could generate long-term wealth from from somebody that likes trapping, likes being outdoors, something like that. So we're going to go over that a little bit towards the end. Before we get started, though, for you guys that don't know, that's around Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, probably some in West Virginia. The PA show is going on this week. It's the first time I haven't been to PA in I don't know how long. And I've been going there for like 15 years. But just for certain reasons, that show just to be honest, guys, not so much with the show and definitely not with the trappers, because I have a lot of good friends I normally see in Pennsylvania. That's just like one big soup sandwich every single year when I go up there. I mean, sometimes it's with the association, sometimes it's with the travel, sometimes where the show's at. Vehicle problems, GPS doesn't work up there very well, you get lost all the time. I mean, it is just a soup sandwich, and it's not really any one thing. I'm not going because I'm protesting anything or anything like that. It's just one of those things in my life that was more of a headache than I wanted to put up with, so I'm not going up there. So I'm transferring that time allotted to go start going up to New York. So if you want to see me and you're up in that area, I'll be up in New York this time. I'm getting ready to be going to Kansas here in probably about 10 days, I guess. And that's going to be out in Kansas at the FTA. And I'm going to have something that I've never done before out there. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about it, because if you're interested, these are really hard to get now. Since I went from a one-ton truck to a Jeep, it just caused me to see that I've got a gluttony of stuff. It's because we're moving some stuff around to try to get ready where we can eventually move over to the new property we bought. And so I've actually had to start doing inventory and stuff like that. And it, like, when I say gluttony, I've got some gluttony of some stuff. And I'm probably going to have, I don't know, 2-4 dozen of the CDRs that I've used, that I've modified, at the Kansas show for sale. I don't know exactly what the price is going to be, but it's not going to be that bad. And part of the reason is that I'm selling them, not because I don't like them, not that I don't want to use them. Guys, I've got literally, I think it's 190 of them. And I physically can't carry that around in the Jeep. So there becomes a point where too much of a good thing is not a good thing. And I want to be able to use that on some other equipment that I want to get for trapping anyway. So I'm just trading assets for assets, basically. So that's what I'm going to be doing up there. So if you're interested in getting some of the CDRs with the big pans, same ones you saw on Cat Collector DVD, I will have those. I'll have some of those at the Kansas show. First come, first serve, cash only. So just letting you know about that. The library will be live next Friday. And what I mean by the library, it's going to be on a website that's we're doing a bunch of testing on right now, and it's called howtotrapit.com. That's actually how you're going to get to it. You'll be able to get to it from my store. I'll have a link in there. You won't pay at the store. You'll have to pay at the website. But howtotrapit.com is actually where the library is going to be, and that's where every single DVD, I've got all 24 of them, I believe, probably 80, 90, 100 hours of all the trapping that I've done over the last, 20 years that I've been recording, all the different species, all the different places, all the different techniques, everything from skinning to catching to, locations, everything's going to be in there. And it's going to be at a one-time price of $199. Now, that's going to be downloadable. You will not be getting the disc. You'll go to that website, and you'll be able to watch them as many times as you want and as much as you want. Now, I did get an email from a guy, and he said, I need to clarify something on this. And I do. And I want anybody that gets the library to understand exactly what it is. I mean, the value is super great, but there also has to be some safeguards against that for myself. And part of that is it's very secure. It's actually on two separate secure sites to funnel that to this other site. So like embedding it somewhere, all that is going to be like, unless you're Steve Jobs Jr., I don't know how you're going to do it. But and the part of the thing is we're restricting the number of IPOs. Now, IPOs is just your internet address, basically. It's like your phone number for your computer, if you don't know what that is. So if you're going to watch this at home on your main computer, that's got its own address. And if you're going to watch it on your smartphone, that also has it on his own address. So when you get this, you're only going to be allowed to watch this on two IPOs. If you call me or email me and tell me that, you know, you've got a laptop or something like that, you will go into a different category where you may be able to get three if I feel like that's what you're doing. The reason I'm doing this, so if someone pays the $199 and they want to give out their username and password to somebody else, it's going to lock everybody out. The person that bought it's going to be locked out. The person that's trying to get it's going to be locked out. And once you go to that point, you just forfeited your right to watch the videos. There's not going to be any sorries, I didn't know, anything like that. So I'm just giving you a full heads up, full disclosure whatsoever. Now, there is going to be legally a time limit on this order for you, but I want to explain what that is so there's no confusion. In the terms of agreement, it's going to say 2 years. Now, the reason that's going to be in there, not because you can't watch it in 3 years, in case I get ran over by a Mack truck and Cindy has a hard time keeping up with all these websites, there has to be a way legally that she can disconnect over time from the websites. And that's all this is. So as long as I don't get ran over by a truck, you'll be able to watch this thing 15 years from now. But if something happens to me and, you know, like I said, I get squished by a great big truck, or, you know, a monster gerbil gets loose and eats my legs off and I bleed out somewhere, there will be a time limit from that point on. And that's more just for security on Cindy's sake, which is my wife, which is, you know, I've got to take care of her too. And it's a legal reason is what it is. But in reality, as long as nothing like that happens to me, and I don't really foresee that happening, it'll be forever that you'll be able to watch the DVD. So it's not like you're buying them for 2 years. You're buying them from life, unless something happens to me and there's just no way to keep it going. So I just want to be full and open about that. But you'll still be getting 2 years. And by then, you'll probably have watched them enough where you're not really going to care anyway by that point, unless you're coming up to something you're having problems with. And that's part of the reason I think the library is so cool. So you get in the trapping season, you're having trouble with a fox or whatever, you'll know where, you know, not that I've got all the answers by any stretch of the imagination, guys, but you can go to the river in DVD and you can see in Blitzkrieg and stuff like that how I'm handling the fox, or you're thinking about snaring fox, you can see how that's working out, different things like that. So that's the library. It'll be live next Friday that you can start ordering that with a credit card or PayPal or whatever you want to do. I am going to run, I don't know how long I'm going to run this, I am going to run a special for the Trapping Radio on this. So what it's going to be is $169. You'll be able to get that. You'll be able to watch all my videos, all like 100 hours of it. I need to add that up so I'll know exactly what it is. But it's a lot, because a lot of the videos are 4 and 6 hours long. They get really detailed into stuff. But for Trapping Radio listeners, or maybe for a month or two, I don't know, for $169, you're going to be able to get this product. But there is a caveat to this. The only way that you're going to get that special price is you're going to have to physically get a postal money order and have it to Clint Locklear, and you send it to me. Now, when I get the money order, as long as you have your email, your name, your address, your phone number in there, make sure they're correct. Don't give me a bogus email or you'll never get your username and password. When that happens, I'm going to send you a username and password. You'll be able to log in and start watching right then. So it'll be about probably 3 or 4 day turnaround by the time you send the postal money order. And that's the only way that I'm going to do the $169. So if you really want to get this like an amazing deal, take you about 5-10 minutes to go down to the post office money orders only, have it out to Clint Locklear, send it to me. I will right away get you your username and password, and you can start diving into all the trap until your eyes just bleed if you want to, because that's how much information and content is going to be on there. And when you put this in perspective, you buy Cat Collector Video, it's $45. You buy the Money Making Strategy, that's $45. Now you've got two DVDs or two DVD sets. That's 10 hours of video right there for $80. That's only two of the 22 or the 24 DVDs that I've got. So that's a crazy amount of value that I'm giving. But if you can go ahead and send those money orders in, if that's what you're interested in doing, as soon as the site goes live, you'll get an email
and you can get in there and start you know, being in my hip pocket as we go around professionally trapping all over the country, because you're going to see state after state after state. You're also going to have access to Randy Smith's videos and Scott Adams' videos. So it's not just mine. It's going to be Randy's and Scott's. So those are also going to be on there. That's just an extra value that you're going to be getting from this thing. So that's what I want to do. I want to start off with a couple of emails that I've got. What's your questions? What's your good questions? And then we're going to get into a little bit of thought about fencing. It's just a really handy way that you can preset stuff out and just really rack up some animals. Okay, this is from Jess, and it goes, what is your summer strategy for setting new coyote job? Can you set too many traps? How many different sets do you need on, say, 2,000 acres? Well, dude, for one, you're talking to a permaculturist, so I've got to give you the correct permaculturist answer, which is it depends, because it really does. Now, the easy question is, can you set too many traps? Yes and no, but probably no. How many scents do you need? That really depends on how creative you are. So we're going to jump into this really quick. But the caveat of it depends is on 2,000 acres. And we have to come to an understanding about this before you take anything else I say to heart. 2,000 acres can be a location-heavy rich place, or it can be pretty much a lot of dead zone. And I'll give you an example. When I'm rolling through Iowa road trapping raccoon, if I was going to be trapping coyotes out in Iowa, I may have a 2,000 acre farm that I'm on. But the way, when once they cut that corn, there may only be three or four places besides dead open field with nothing out there, no life. I mean, there's nothing in those fields. It's like a cotton field once it gets picked and turned under. So there's nothing out there. So the locations on 2,000 acres on something like that, or some of the big places you get down in Mississippi, or even Louisiana, you know, those places are not going to have the same amount of locations to set up. They're just not there. And I've noticed when I've talked to Randy about what he's done out in Indiana, It's kind of the same thing. You have really big tracts of ground, but there's only really a few locations, because everything else is kind of like a desert or dead area of any type of life. So, you know, that's where the big depend comes. You know, so, you know, how many traps do you need? That's where the depends becomes very important. How many scents do you need? That's where it is. Now, I'm assuming, when you say coyote job, we're on the same page. We're talking about predator control. Now, if you go to one of these farms that has a big dead area, and you're going to try to do work on something like that, it's going to be a struggle. And here's the reason why. Because you have such few locations, and coyotes have a tendency, once you start putting pressure on them, to bounce or move away from you for a while. That didn't give you a lot of options, you know. So in a really big dead area type place, it's a lot tougher. Now most people that trap, when they say 2,000 acres, it's not set up in that fashion, and I understand that. You know, 2,000 acres here in Tennessee is a big piece of ground. We don't have these great big massive 500,000 and 700,000 acre fields. So you have a lot of different locations. You've got a lot of old roads going through the woods. You've got two lanes. You've got fences. You've got rivers and creeks and swamps. You've got all that. So the life there is way more diverse, and there's a lot more going on, and there's a lot more reason for a coyote to be in a certain area for a longer amount of time. So that's what you have to keep in mind. Now, in that type of situation, which is most of America, that most guys are going to be trapping, especially in some type of predator control, you can't set too many traps. I don't think you can. But there again, there's the it depends that you have to understand. If you're going to go into a place and you're going to set the same type of set over and over again, yes, you can set too many sets. So if you're doing a Charlie Robbins dirt hole set, or a portable pocket, or a double wobble hole set, or you know, whatever your flavor of the week is that you're going to use for your set. If you repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat on 2,000 acres, and you do that 30, 40, 50, 100 times, that is going to cause you an issue. You know, so, but that's not really the number of traps. That's the style of set. And I just want to be very clear on that. You know, so if you're going to go in and you're going to set traps, the way that I normally set up a coyote job is the first thing I do is I pull up on Google Maps, if possible. And then I ask the landowner, is the map somewhat the same? Because you'll go to some jobs where I've been, where you pull up Google Maps, you get a real good layout of the land, and you can see where the roads and the creeks and the, you know, the ridges and the valleys are, and if there's swamps and ponds and rivers and all that type of stuff. And then they've had a biologist come in or something, they've cleared all bunch of this stuff off, or they moved the river, their Corps of Engineers straightened the river like they've been out in West Tennessee, and it's no longer there. So you need to correct that. And what I'm looking at when I'm going to a new job is I'm looking for the flow of the coyotes. And the flow is just like if you squint your eyes at Google Maps, and I don't care what the property is, if there's any features or any type of elevation change at all, even if it's a couple of feet, you will see that almost all of the trees, the structures, the hills, everything kind of flows one direction. It could be north, south, northeast, southwest, whatever way it is. You'll see the big line of trees running in an angle. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get a fix on, is the flow of the land, because the coyotes will work with the flow of the land, not against the land. Because they're going to want to stay in cover as much as they can, and they're going to be moving down these different flow routes, and that's where you're going to start picking up these travel ways. So I'm looking at the map. I figure out the flow of the land. And one good way to look at it is it's either through structure or our water would run off the land. That's the way the land's going to be flowing. If you just pull up a Google map and you'll see everything kind of does something. You know, the next thing is access. With the Google Maps and with the landowner, I want to go, okay, this road and this, I'm going to make this very generic for the radio show, for an example. We have a square block of land. The lodge is on the very southern tip of the land. You've got a road that goes from the southern tip in the middle to the northern in the other side till it goes off the property, a logging road or something. I'm going to see that long travel way all the way through that 2,000 acres. And I want to make sure before I start setting a bunch of traps down, this either I'm going to have to scout it or I'm going to have to talk to the landowner that it's still there and that I can actually get up and down it without having to winch, you know, pull the winch off the Jeep every 20 feet to do it. So what I'm looking for then is access. Once I get the flow, I go for access. So then I'm going to look at that from north to south because that's kind of my starting point. And then somewhere in there, I'm trying to find access that gives me east and west. Now every property is going to be different because not every property is a block and perfectly lined up with a compass. But you'll kind of get what I'm saying. I'm trying to make a cross of some kind, or a, you know, Red Cross symbol type thing. That's what I'm shooting for when I'm looking for access. So once I find those two, and these roads may not be perfectly straight all the way across the property. That's okay. There may have to be a little bit of back dragging, or, you know, back something like that, which is fine. You know, I mean, he may have to go on another little road to meet up another road, but you're trying to go as far as you can and where you're making a cross on the property. Then I'm going to, that's going to be the two main things that I concentrate on, those two roads of access or two ways to get from north and south, east and west, or whatever that turns out to be. And I'm going to start at one end and I'm going to slowly drive up through there. And every time that I come to something that's probably going to be a coyote travel way, the edge of a fence, a great big deer trail that comes out next to the road, where roads cross, where you have an edge of a fence and or you have the edge of a woods coming up to the road and you've got that big gap, but you've got that edge right there. You know, I'm looking for every single travel way that I can, and I'm going to put a trap there. I'm not going to put two. I'm not going to put three. I'm going to put one. Now, that's my own personal way of doing this, and this is what you ask. What is your strategy? That's my strategy. So if I go up this road on 2,000 acres, depending on the shape and the access, that north and south road may have 20, 30, 40 traps on it. Each travelway gets a trap. You know, that can be a snare, it could be a blind set, it could be whatever, but every one of those is going to get a set. And then I'm going to come back down, drive back down to the middle, and I'm going to drive east or west, and I'm going to repeat that process. So if you draw this out on a map with a piece of square and you got a cross in the middle of it, you cordon that thing off, and you're blocking up every single travel way that you can. Now, when a coyote starts to move through that area, that is going to allow you to come in contact with him as many times as you possibly can on that property, because it's not going to do you any good off the property what he's doing, only on that property. So if you have a coyote that comes south for a while, then heads east and goes back west and goes north, he's going to cross those roads pretty much. And when my strategy, when I first start a new job, is I'm trying to get max amount of coyotes off the property, which is normally going to be pups. So my strategy when I start a new job is going to be to set out a bunch of dirt hole sets, showy dirt hole sets. They're going to be little, they're going to be big, some are going to look like groundhogs, some are going to look like mice, some are going to be dug under rocks, you know, if I find hollow parts in a tree, hay bales that I can kick around or whatever, I'm going to go with that one thing. You know, I've got the auger, I've got the two different bits that I use, I could use a hand drill, I could use a shovel, I can use re-rod for wobble holes. I want to have it where when a coyote, and this is where you have to be creative. You know, some are in grass clumps, some are out in the open, you know, some up are against really big structure, different things like that. You want them to all look different. Your patterns look different. Some are tight patterns, some are real sloppy patterns, some have no patterns, some have big, you bring out a bunch of dirt and you've got the fresh dirt, then you're blending in the set to the left or right of that that clump, wherever you put that, of just soft dirt. So you got to be really, really creative when you're doing this type thing. And that allows you to set as many traps pretty much as you want. And the goal of that is so when that coyote moves through that area, you're coming in contact with him. And that's really, really important. Going through a piece of property like that, the biggest mistake that I see trappers that trap for fur than try to do control work is they try to do it like they would a long line. So they find three or four really good looking hot trapper looking locations. They put four or six traps right there, and then they go back and they check them. Well, see, the way a coyote moves through an area, they don't really understand that your really hot location is all that important to them in their life. But they're going to travel and they're going to be moving around. So that's where the travel ways, to me personally, my strategy is way more important than the actual location. And what you'll find out if you actually do this is you will catch more coyotes this way of a smaller piece of ground, because wherever they go, they're coming in contact with equipment. And the more they come in contact with equipment that looks different, is presented differently, the better chance that they're going to work it. That's very different than running a standard dirt hole set over and over and over and over and over again. For one, that's boring, and two, it the coyotes start seeing patterns, and you know, they're smelling weird stuff, and eventually they seem, you know, because I can't talk to them, but they seem to become pretty leery of that if you do that, because that's the way I started. I mean, you know, this has come from a lot of years of experience with me doing it this way. So that's how many traps you can set, is how many travel ways you can find, as long as they're not all repetitious. Now, how many different sets do you need? I mean, scents, and I'm assuming you mean bait too. You probably only need, for ADC work on 2,000 acres, depending on the amount of travel ways you find, probably six or seven different lures and three baits, something like that, maybe four baits. And you're going to mix them up. So, like, if you're using my stuff and you're going to go out and the first set you come to, you plop in some Boss Dog and some Booty Call Gland Lure. Well, the next one you go down, you may just put in Federales. And then you go down from that and you put in Yod Dope and Primal Paste Bait. And then you go down from that and you may put Primal Paste Bait and Boss Dog. And then you go down and you put one with just Yod Dope. And then you go down and you put one with Gator Bait. So we're stretching these out over a long time, and it's being it's just mixing up what you're doing. Now, in the middle of all this, if you're going to be doing coyote work and you're going to be doing bigger acreage with lots of locations, you need to start thinking ahead of time. If you know somebody that likes to go fish, have them keep you a 5 gallon bucket of really small bluegills or something like that. Salt them, take 3 or 4 of them with you in your job. You can put them down a dirt hole, just the fish, nothing else. You know, a chunk of beaver meat down the hole like that. If you like, one of the things I like since I raise chickens and ducks is when we harvest the chickens and ducks, I keep everything that we don't eat. You know, we keep the innards, we keep the heads, we keep the wings, which I normally keep for bobcats. But you'll have somewhat of a carcass. I no longer pluck ducks like I used to. So I'm just taking the breast and legs out of there. There's still a lot of meat in there. I'll shove that thing down in a hole. You know, if I come across roadkill cats, it's somewhat fresh. It's going in a hole. I'm spreading this out over as much. So when a coyote is covering that 2,000 acres, he's going to come in contact with a lot of equipment. But it's not going to be a lot of repetition. And that's the key, is not a lot of repetition, because if you do, you're going to be in trouble. So, you know, it's one of those things. There's no way to have a formula on setting up a new job. They're all going to be different, but that's the strategy that I use when it comes to setting up a new job. Like I said before, if I can go back and I can set up a contract this way, the next time it's purely flat sets. And then after that, it's all going to be snares or blind sets. And by the time you really work a piece of ground like that, you're probably going to be down to only one or two coyotes at best, and or worst, and zero coyotes. You know, and if you do this in the right time of the year, especially after the first of the year, that person's probably going to be pretty much coyote free till the next dispersal, which is going to be in the fall. So if you're setting up a coyote job, I'm assuming it's something to do with their eating, where it's going to be deer, sheep, lamb, llamas, cows, something like that. So if you do it this way and you hammer them hard enough, you know, this thing that they just move back in, that's a myth. They do not just move back in. You wear them out hard enough, it takes them several years to just move back into the same population. So, you know, keep all that stuff in mind when you're going out to start a new job, you know, and just roll with what you see, you know, I mean, really roll with what you see. And the sad part about doing coyote jobs, guys, is if you only get to go once, you're kind of at a loss because you've got to learn the property. And all this comes into your business ability to explain this to a landowner. You know, you've got to, and after you trap a while, you'll figure out that most of the coyotes are probably going to be in one or two areas of that on these particular travel ways. You know, and then when you come back, you'll know where to concentrate on more. Another thing that I really like to do on a new job, but you don't want to abuse this, guys. Please listen to me. Do not abuse this. Is locate coyotes. You can do this with a Fox Pro. You can do this with whatever. The what I like to use are sirens, old like fire truck sirens and different things like that. I can just hook it up to the battery on my truck or my Jeep. If you're using a fire truck siren, you can mount it. I never really did. I just have to step on it so it didn't walk all over the ground. Put on get you some headphones like you're going to be shooting with. Put those on. Crank that thing up. Let it wind up really good. Let it come back down. Take your headphones off, and the coyotes will tell you where they're at. You know. And in the summertime, part of the reason you want to know where that is so you don't get, you know, knee deep into their den, because then you're going to have issues with them bouncing, and there's nothing going to be there. So, all of this is just strategy. You know, it's using your brain when you're when you're doing this. Now, our next email is from Jeremy, and he goes, I loved your, see, hey, Clint, love your show, listen every week. I'm in Central Kentucky and was wondering if there's a market for snapping turtles. I sold probably last year and was wondering about other sources. I can catch several a year. I've seen on some exotic meat websites that sell up to $40 a pound. Yes, there is a market. They're not easy to find, and they're in, like we talked a few weeks back, it's very volatile. It's just like trapping. If you're just looking for a market, I highly suggest that I hate to give his number out. I don't think he would mind, but I'm not going to do that. Newt Sterling, which is out of New Jersey, his website is snareone.com. You can contact him through there. And he's probably one of the bigger buyers on the East Coast. Now, Kentucky's a long way from New Jersey, but he does these routes where he comes in. And if the market's there, he goes a long way to get turtles. And just like anything else, you need to make sure you have a market for you catch the turtles. So if you're going to call Newt, and make sure that there is a market, and then you go out and catch the turtles, then you sell the turtles. Don't catch the turtles and try to find a market for them. Now, another way, I know there's one out in Iowa, and none of these are close to you because you're kind of like I am in Tennessee, being in Kentucky. There used to be one out in West Tennessee, which I'm not really sure. Probably the simplest way to find a buyer that's going to be processing these things, that's going to handle any amount of volume, is going to be contact the USDA and find out what processing facilities handle turtles. And if they're buying turtles for the processing, then you've got a ready-made market probably. Now, the thing about the exotic meat, well, dude, you're going to have to, I'm not going to say you're going to have to. That's not the right thing for me to say. Maybe the best thing to do is sell directly to those sites at a wholesale price, or better yet, start selling it yourself. If you're going to have turtle meat for sale, and I'm pretty sure that you're going to have some questions about if it's legal to do or not, I really don't know. There again, I really don't care. You know, I'm at the point now with the way that our government's going, I really don't care what they say. So, you know, but that's me, maybe not you. If you're going to be selling food that's been processed, the government always wants to have their little sticky, grubby hands in there and cause you a lot of heartache. So you may have to find somewhere with a processing plant, either that they process it or you work out a deal with them that they're USDA approved. And, you know, like in the evenings or whatever, you can go in their facility and process it in there. Is that going to make the meat any better for you or the customer? No, but it's just an overreaching government, and that's the one we live in. But if there was a way that I could sell it myself online through the mail, I would rather do that. You know, because they're selling for $40 a pound, and you have it for $30 or $40 a pound, and you're going to catch, say, 500-600 pounds of dressed turtle meat, you're much better off selling that at a retail price than you are a wholesale price. Now, this goes back to the trapping thing. Trappers think in terms of wholesale commodity prices. You catch it and you don't want to market it, so you just find someone that's going to buy it and you pray that they give you enough money to cover your expenses and a little bit of profit. If I was going to get into the turtle trapping hard, again, I would be looking at a way to process it where it'd be legal possibly, if that's important to you, and selling it myself to get retail price. Because there's a big difference. If you're selling turtles for $2 a pound wholesale, well, you got to catch a lot, which you can definitely do with turtles, to make any amount of money, which you can at wholesale price. $2 a pound, you can make some money. But you can make really, really good money at $30 a pound. Now, you're going to have to process the turtles. You'll get much faster at that. A Newt on the Turtles by the Ton, the DVD that me and Newt did, you'll see exactly how he does it. Very quick, it's very clean. It does really good, and you can mimic that system. And there may be actually some grandfather laws that you can process yourself up to a certain amount, possibly like chickens. I don't know, you'd have to look into that. But this Bebel ask a question on something like this, I'm not sure anybody's really going to have the answer. It's going to have to become your little you're going to have to start your little PI firm there in Kentucky, and you're going to have to really research this and see what the best options are. You know, turtle meat, I would highly bet that if you processed it yourself, even if you had to go and pay a USDA facility to rent some of their space just to do it in their table or whatever, you know, after hours or whatever, you know, there's restaurants that would probably serve turtle that don't serve it now just because, one, they don't realize it's really there. It can be locally grown, chemically free, non-farmed turtle meat that's really nutrition. Do some research on what the nutrition of turtle is. Go to some different places. You know, you may find you have a market at a farmer's market for, you know, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 pounds of it a week. But if it's bringing, you know, $20, that ain't a bad Saturday morning to do that. You know, you got to be creative in how you're going to go about this. You know, but yes, there is a market. People like eating turtle. A lot of people do, especially with the Asians. Now, Asians are going to want to get as cheap as possible. You know, if you've got any Asians around you in the bigger cities around you, I would start going to some of the more Asian parts of town and start talking to the restaurants and the grocery stores and, you know, maybe put a thing up at some of the wherever they go and they kind of hang out and put some 3x5 cards up, you know, fresh turtle meat for sale. If you're interested, give me a call. You know, you're going to have to hustle a little bit to do this. It's not going to be quite like fur where you go out and catch the fur and you just dump it in a bag and hand it to a NAPA agent. You know, if you're really going to make money at it. So that, you know, just kind of keep that in mind when you're doing about it. But yes, there is a market, you know, and if you're not sure, get a hold of Newt and he'll tell you kind of what it is. You know, he'll be pretty straight up with you about that. Okay. Now what I want to talk about is fencing. And I may have talked about this a little bit more in the past, but something really got me thinking because I was out looking at some ground the other day. And back when otter were really high, and I was in Louisiana, and the creeks were very shallow, and they were very wide, and there wasn't a lot of structure in a lot of them, it really frustrated me of how to catch them. And one of the ways that I came up with how to catch them was I would go find old fences that farmers had rolled up in the back that was all rusted. I would look for places that had cheap fence and stuff like that. Now keep in mind, when I was doing this, otter were bringing $140, $160 for the good silver Delta otter. So if I spent $200 on fence, but I caught an extra 10 otter, you know, I'm still making a ton of money, so it didn't really bother me as much. Water prices are down, so you have to be a little bit creative. And there's all kind of fencing around us, guys. I mean, you just want it to have where it's 6 inches to 2x4, something like that. That's kind of what you're looking at. And what I would do is I would imitate what I used to see down in Texas, and they call it a hurricane fence. And what these fences did down in Texas is you have all this high dollar game in here, exotics and deer and stuff. But when they do get rain in Texas, they flood like crazy. So if you've got high tensile fence going down through a draw and you get a big flood, it's probably going to tear down hundreds and hundreds of yards of fence. So what they would do is they would build a hurricane fence. And a hurricane fence basically is a fence that gives when it gets a lot of pressure. And it would be it'd be taut on the top and it would be weak on the bottom. Excuse me. So when the current came down, if you had a flood, which is, if you ever start doing this, you'll see why this is so important. The fence would break loose at the bottom. The water would flow. When the water came down, the fence would kind of back settle. And then they would go around and just kind of resettle it at the bottom before the animals figured out they had a great big hole to get through. So if you're doing beaver or otter with this thing, and you're going to have any type of flooding or raising currents and stuff like that in the winter, which pretty much everybody's going to have, and you're going to use fence, you don't want to lose your fence. So you want to think of a hurricane fence type situation. So you're going to go to a creek, and it's not going to, you're not going to see, you can't find the channel. There's really no structure. You can't see any reason, but it's a good place to go. You know there's otter or beaver in the area. So how are we going to catch them? Well, I would find two trees or a lot of under bridges is what I did. And I would just string that fence along the bottom. And then on both edges or in the middle, depending if I could get out to it, I would cut holes as big as a 330. And then I would go upstream and I would just pull a bunch of brush. You know, and then what I would do is I would strategically let that flow into that fence, but not on the trap. So what happens is a beaver and otter's going down or upstream. There's a fence across the water. That's not going to scare a beaver nor an otter. And then it's got, I'm not like coating the fence with any type of grass or something. I just want to show them, this is where you go through. Over here, guys, this is the open spot. And, you know, you can do that pretty simple. You just pull a bunch of grass on there, let it float down with the current, or get caught on the fence. Some of them will get on your traps where the hole's at. You just pull that out of the way, put it back in the middle. Then you set your traps in these holes. Now, this was one of the ways that allowed me to catch so many otters so fast when I would go out of state. And it looked like I was a construction worker there for a while in Louisiana, because I'd be carrying so much of this fence around with me. So I'd get out of the truck, I'd look under the bridge. If there was a place to catch an otter with no fence, I'd go set the trap. If there wasn't, I would get a piece of this wire, a roll of it, I would stretch it across. I would kind of look at the deeper part. If one side was a little deeper, that's where I'd put the traps. You know, if it's a sandbank on one side, the otter are probably not going to go over there as much. You know, I might leave that one alone. I put one in the middle. You just got to look at your individual situation. And then I would run a heavier wire, like 11 gauge, from the top to either the bridge post or some shrubs or some trees, and get it real tight. And then I would just get some sticks, anything that I could find around it, and pin the bottom down. So when the current did come through, which was about every other week in Louisiana, it would blow the bottom out, then I'd just come back and fix the fence. Now, what happens when you do this, it gets really interesting. If you catch a male otter, you just leave it alone. You'll catch another one. If you catch a female or a young otter, you need to pull the fence up and at least move it down 10 or 15 feet. There's something about an otter that when they come across a structure and it causes them damage and they see it, they'll just get out of the creek and go around the whole fence. But they don't seem smart enough to realize that it's the same obstacle just further down the creek. They don't have the same intelligence as we do. They seem to put most of their focus on what it is right there. So if you catch a male otter, leave it alone because he's by himself most of the time. But if you catch a female or a smaller otter, they're probably in a group. That you've killed that location for those particular animals, so just move it up or down the creek. But it's actually really fast to put in, especially the more you do it. And this fence idea is, when I started playing around with it, there's been some books and stuff written about it since then. I mean, guys have got really switched on to this with horse panels and hog panels and stuff like that. I mean, like ADC guys. When I first started looking at it, it was out of desperation because I knew that there was $160 animals that I couldn't figure out how to catch. And I thought back to the High Rolling Coon book from Craig O'Gorman. And he was saying back in the fur boom, guys would just run snow fence down the ditches and cut holes and put 330s in there. Now, this was way back in the day before we had the same rules that we have today. And they worked really good. They could really rack up coons. Now, doing what they were doing was also really racked up some hunting dogs. So that became frowned on pretty much in the Midwest after 3 or 4 years of this. But in the water, I don't have the dog problems per se, as you can imagine. So I was like going, well, if I can't put snow fence in there, for one, I couldn't get snow fence in Louisiana. I doubt it from anywhere. And the water would catch into it and it would cause almost like a dam effect. And that's not what I want. I just want the water to be able to flow through there, but guide the animal to go through the trap. Because an otter or beaver coming up the creek, when they hit this fence, they're not going to get out of the water unless they have to. And then when they come to the opening with the 330, they'll just go through it. And it's amazing how that works. And it's very simple. Don't complicate this. You know, if you've got three or four locations that you know you've got otter, you can go out ahead of time, go and get your hurricane fence in, and let it float when the current season comes a couple days before season. Go set your fence in, let the animals get used to it. And then opening day, you just go put your traps in the holes and it's done. I mean, it's kind of, you can't get any more basic than this, guys. I mean, you really can't. So that's how that works. And that got me thinking, what if I tried this with other things? And I know it works for coon because it worked back in the 80s. And I played around with this, and it's pretty slick. And one of the things from going to Texas so much with the high fences is you see if an animal gets used to a fence, he no longer pays any attention to it. And if he knows how to get around it or through it, he really goes. So if you were to come to Sequatchie County, where I live in Tennessee, there is about 20 places along the river's edge that I have fencing that's been there now for several years. It's still set up like a hurricane fence, even though it's on dry ground. The reason for that is because we live in the mountains, and when we do flood, we really flood. And I'm talking like, you know, a 6-foot creek turns into 500 yards wide flood type thing. So I don't want to lose my fences. I've only lost one so far, and I'm sure a tree or something just happened to get a hold of it and pull it down. But I run really heavy, and what I'm using on permanent fences like this is the non-annealed number 9 wire that you get like at Tractor Supply or the co-op. It's big like number 9 wire, and it doesn't rust forever because it's galvanized. It's not annealed like trapping wire. It's not soft. And then what I'll do is I'll just run some of that around a tree or a fence on both sides. And then what I'm looking for are places that I can't really pin down where an animal's gonna go through on a high bank. So I'll run this fence, and some of them are about 40 feet long. And then I will go, and then I'll, depending on what I'm using it for, And the hole size that I like to use is about 10 inches tall, 12 inches tall, and normally about 8-9 inches wide. And I will just cut this hole in this fence. And then I will pin it down with some river cane or some really light wire on some brush or something on the bottom. And then I go away. Now when season comes, now I want you to imagine what this is like. When season comes, I know where these fences are. The animals have been using them all year long. It makes them go to where I know they're going to be. And then all I have to do is go in and here, since we're allowed to snare, I just go ahead and put a snare, because I go ahead and hook it to the fence or with a snare support. I just open the snare in that hole and I'm done in no time whatsoever. And because I'm done in no time whatsoever, I mean, it's almost like give me animals. And everybody needs some give me animals. I mean, it just makes your day go a little bit better. So give me animals are good. And that's what this is. If you've got bridges, because I've done this out in West Tennessee when we used to road trap in West Tennessee, you've got these bridges that are, they're like concrete culverts. And they come down, let me see if I can describe these. They're not just a box where a road's over them. They've got these wing walls that come out at 45 degrees. And they flood a lot. So what I've learned from then, from doing those, is for coon, gray fox, red fox, and bobcats, is I would take a small section of fence, and I would go get a pole, and I'd beat that in about a foot out in the water. And I would run that thing all the way up to about 10 inches from the actual wall of the culvert. And I would beat another pole in it right there. And then that would only be wired off to the top. And then I would stick a couple of pieces of sticks and stuff to get it going in the bottom. Now, the reason I'm doing that is a lot of these culverts, when you get up to them, they're flat on the bottom. And between the wing wall and where you can actually set a trap, because the way the water fluctuates, coons and bobcats, everything go through there if there's any way they can walk. it worked better for me than trying to get in the culvert with them and do that. Plus, I could check them quicker. I've just got to look over the bridge, catch, no catch, you know, then I'd make the decision what to do at that point. So I would run that all the way up against that wing wall, and I'd leave them, you know, 10 inches or so of open space. Well, that because you have these just sandbars that go out to this creek, and it's shallow most of the time, and then it deepens up right there at the culvert part, which makes it hard for you to go in and put a type of set. And, you know, the animals would come down that big long sandbar, and they would hit this fence, and they would kind of mill around, I can imagine, and they would get to the end and go, hey, I can go through here. And then they walk through there. And they're caught at that point. Because, you know, snares are footholds in states that you could use body grip traps on dry land. I'd be a little nervous because of the dogs, because this is such a positive catch of an animal trying to go up and down that creek. You need to be very careful of where you're doing this. So I'd like to have the option that I can turn something loose if it's not what I want to catch. You know, and like I said, because it is so positive a way of to catch something, you're kind of, whatever comes down that creek, you're going to catch. Now, what I haven't done with these is for mink. But I can only imagine, guys, and actually I may play around with this a little bit this winter. Get some fence. You know, you get a 100 roll of fence and you cut it into 10-inch high sections and roll that up, you know, 10 or 15 feet or whatever like that. And then you could run that and give a mink two or three different places to go through and just put a 110 in there or, a foothold trap or something like that, or even a snare if you're into that. And you could really block that stuff down. Now, the reason I like doing this, for one, it makes locations that I've got so-so type trap locations at, and it turns it into a hot location instantly. That's one of the reasons I like doing it. The other is, it allows me a lot of times to force the animal as far away from, especially on a creek or a river, away from the water as possible, so I don't have the mud, the freezing, and stuff like that as bad as if I have to do it down there on the sandbar, and I can move that animal. Now, even on a river, some of the places that I've got are just access points that I have, and I can run on a high bank, I can run 20, 25 feet of fence, weave it through the trees, you know. And then where I think they're going to be going through, I give them a couple openings. They get used to going through there. I can plop in a blind set or a snare, and I'm down the road. You can be very creative with these. And the thing about doing this is, the biggest part is, you just got to be creative enough to find you cheap sources of fencing. And once you do that, you're in business. And this may seem like that's too much work to put in a set. Keep in mind, the energy that I did with some of these fences around here at home, I'm still catching fur off of when I want to, very quickly around the house, because I know where they're at. The animals are used to going through them, and it's setting up a perfect situation. So as you're thinking about your season coming up, think about the different ways that you can shorten and get as many of these give me animals as you can, because that's when it gets really, really neat and fun. You know, if you're just trapping around home all the time, I mean, you can have a line set out with doing things like we've talked about, the bridges going across gullies and stuff like that with dog proofs. You know, you pop in a freedom brand on each side, and the coon get used to going over a log that you've got staked down. We've went over that before. And you set your lines up with bait stations and different things like that. I mean, you're just going to be slamming animals. But the standard guy that's going out and just going to set traps when opening day comes, he's never going to be able to catch up with you from that point on. Not that you're trying to beat somebody, but the quicker you get animals in your truck, the better you're going to be as a trapper, as far as then you have to figure out what you're going to do with them. So keep that in mind. Don't be afraid of fences when it's to do this. And plan these things out, because if you start going out and you start really having this in your mind and mulling this over, there's a lot of things you can do. Like there's one place, there's a beaver swamp about 25 miles from me that's got an old man-made ditch that the otter, they never use really any type of trail per se. It's always cut grass. They go up it all over the place. Well, I can run a fence because it's only, I think that one's about 60 feet long. I ran a small 12-inch fence all the way across the bottom. And then I got three or four different holes in there. And then I can put the 330s in the water so they're legal. And then when the otter come up to that fence, by the time I go set traps, they've got used to going through those holes and they don't think anything about it. And pop, 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 pop. And it's just amazing how well it works. If you put the upfront energy into it that you need to. So keep this stuff in mind, guys, because this is the stuff that makes trapping way more fun in the long term than trying to horse your way through everything. So I just want to say that. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, guys, is our world's going crazy. I mean, it is absolutely crazy. You've got Republicans and Democrats that are trying to completely disassemble your and my rights over the terrorist thing. They're like frothing at the mouth to take guns away. And there again, this is where I'm going to fall back to. I don't care. I don't care what laws they pass. I don't care what they say is legal. I no longer pay attention to them yahoos up there at all. If they say it's illegal to have guns, I've got a shovel. I can figure out what to do with my guns. And I'm going to leave it alone at that. You know, if you don't have some ammo, I suggest you getting some. Our country's getting so divisive, we're getting a little bit closer to civil war every day. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't want it to happen. It's not going to be romantic the way that I hear people talk about, you know, we're going to start a civil war. Most people will lose their houses. They will lose their jobs. They won't be able to get gas. You're not going to be able to get on the internet. You know, I mean, civil wars are ugly, ugly things. But there is a good chance that we're going to see what that is in our lifetime, the way this is going, because our country is getting so divided in so many different areas. And if you look at the elections now, Bernie Sanders and Trump are an admiration of just how disgusted people are with Washington. So keep that in mind. And the reason I want to say this to you, I mean, you know, there's a lot of weird things going on. Europe, Britain has just now got out of the EU, which to me is a no-brainer. Why would a country not want to have its own sovereignty? Because you've got basically two great big milk tits in Europe. One is Britain and one is Germany. And all those countries are used to sucking off that milk. And now one of their big tits is gone. Now Germany's left. Now Germany ain't going to put up with that. Just look back at history. Germany does not put up with that very long. So you're going to have all these countries getting all upset because they don't have all the freebies they're used to getting. Plus, it's going to cause a lot of what they're doing over there is because of the Muslim immigrants. Just a fact. Around here, the way people are looking at this, I've got a really good friend that his dad is older. And he says he stresses out going to a restaurant because now he's thinking every time someone comes through the door, do they have a gun or not? I mean, terrorist is working in America, you know, which eventually Americans are not going to, they're not going to put up with that. And it's going to get ugly. Because one thing about Caucasian European based males is they'll let you push them around so far and then they don't let you push them around at all. And that's normally at the point of no return when that happens. So the world's changing, and you've got all this automation going on. Europe right now is trying to get laws passed where they can charge taxes to robots because they're taking over people's jobs, which they're going to be doing a lot more in America, and they're panicking over the tax rate because if most businesses go to automation, which they are, their tax race is going to be round, so now they're trying to figure out how to make robots where they have to pay union dues and Social Security type taxes and regular taxes, which means business is just going to have to suffer for that. But it also means that they see automation coming in such a way that if you have a job that you're doing anything repetitious, your job's in danger. Because if they can do it with a robot, they're going to do it with a robot. And this isn't like 20, 30 years down the road, guys. It's going to be happening. You're going to start seeing it more and more at restaurants and different things like that. And everybody thinks that a robot can't do their job. Robot can do about anything now. So it's just the world's just getting flipped. I mean, you know, just the way that people are thinking, it's just getting more and more nuts. You, what you're not going to see on the news is there's a little 8 or 9 year old white girl that got raped by a bunch of Muslim teenagers up in Idaho, and they filmed it, and that's just their ideology is if you're not a Muslim, they're allowed to rape you, kill you, torture you, whatever, because you're not human. Well, it came out that they just gang raped this little bitty girl, and the news that did get talked about it was saying anybody that thought this was atrocious or brought up the word Muslims, racist, and bigot. I mean, the world is upside down nuts. They should have took those teenagers out and put a 45 between their brains and get them out of the gene pools, what they should have done, and done it on national TV. Better yet, shove some bacon grease in their throat so they can meet Allah with hog juice coming out their teeth when they went to see him to do whatever they're going to do with him. I mean, the world is just turned nuts. And the reason I want to talk about a few, and I'm not going to make this into a business class today, guys. I just want you to think about some things. As a trapper, you know, you have the meat stuff, and, you know, and meat trappers doing some stuff now, so we get more into that. We've talked a little bit about it. But the outdoor type guy that's in trapping, I just don't know why more people don't think this way. Part of the reason I'm starting a farm, a permaculture farm that's going to be extremely self-sufficient, not because I'm a wacko environmentalist, but because as things get more squirrely, that's going to have a lot of value that I can somewhat control. What goes on the internet, I can't control. What goes on, you know, with stock market, I can't control. My vote's not going to make you a hill of beans whether Hillary or Trump gets elected, so I don't have any control over that. And one of them never read the Constitution, one knows the Constitution, and she hates it. So I just don't say any of that's going to get better. So figure out a way, guys, to think about long-term wealth from a trapper's point of view. And I'm going to give you a couple examples. I'm not going to go really deep into this, but you need to start thinking about this. Please listen to me on this. Start thinking about ways where you can actually generate some money yourself. And don't do it in such a short-term way of thinking that we as Americans always think about things. Think about things long-term. Think about your kids. Think about, I don't want to get too off the track. But start thinking in terms of long-terms. You know, if you can go buy some land and you can plant some black walnuts, you can grow them things from seed, guys. If you got black walnuts growing in your area, you can get them and grow them for nothing. You plant them, you figure out a way to water them, you keep the grass under control for a couple of years, and then you put them on rows, you go trim them up so they don't have side branches till they get, you know, 20 feet up. Just let them start growing straight as you can. Put acres out of that. If Americans would start thinking like this, especially trappers start thinking like this, if you did this when you're 19, or you do this for your kid now that's 3, and you go put this in, and then you get the land paid for and you get it in their name, better yet, put it in a foundational trust so there's no taxes and it doesn't cost your kid anything when you die, that is their full retirement sitting there on that ground. Now, I don't know why we as Americans don't think this way. Because it, with the resources we have, there's no reason for anybody to be poor long term. There's really not. Because you can grow the trees for free. You can get junk land and clear. You can go buy an acre or two of pasture and plant these trees in there. And you can rock and roll with it. Now, what is that? An acre of these trees in 40, 45 years, and that's a long time. But think about it. Is Social Security going to be around? If you're 20 years old now and you're listening to this and you're a trapper, Social Security going to be around when you're 65? Probably not. I'd almost bet you any amount of money it's not. Or it's not going to be able to buy you anything. One of the two. The trees, though, if you trim them up right and you put them out and do your own research on this, you're probably talking anywhere at today's price of probably $500,000 an acre of trees that are taken care of when they're that old, because of the quality of wood that it is. It's not for pulpwood. It's not for anything like that. You can do the same thing with black cherry. You can do it with English walnuts. You can, you know, find really good trees. You can put in a nut orchard. Around here, if you add pecans in, you know, locally, chemical-free, whatever pecans, they sell them all over the place for $9 a pound. And people buy them all day long. All you got to do is get a sheller, put them in a bag, $9 a pound. You get an acre of pecans going, that's more than most people listen to this show making a year. And it's long term. That's something a trapper can do. And people are always going to want nuts no matter what the stock market's going to do. So there's value for that there. Starting a backyard nursery, guys, it's not hard. Do some research. You can look around and how to do it. You can grow to you can grow trees and bushes and learn how to do propagation. I mean, you can have a $30,000, $40,000 business in your backyard part-time, and you only have to deal with customers probably about 2 months out of the year unless you're going to go the internet route. So, and the more screwed up the world gets, the more edible plants are going to come popular. Every time the economy goes bad, blueberries are hard to find. Pecan trees are hard to find. I mean, you get into some more of the niche stuff when it comes to the edibles, you'll have a business that's rocking and rolling when everybody else is suffering. And that's the only reason you're going to get that is with a little bit of planting now. You're going to try to start it then, you're going to have a rough time because you're going to have the learning curve to go through. So, you know, backyard nurseries, everything from little flowers for soccer moms to put in their front yard to growing seedlings from seeds that you can turn. I mean, think about it. A black walnut tree that is 4 or 5 feet tall sells for $20. You get that in 2 years. You put a seed in the ground, you dig the thing up, you put it in a pot, and you get $20. I mean, you only need, you know, 50 by 50 space in your yard to grow these trees, and you probably just turn around and made $15,000, $20,000. See, that's taking care of your own self. That's using your brain when you're looking at your long-term security and teaching your kids how to do stuff like this. I had a question on here about worms and worm castings. People like to go fishing with worms. Worms are not hard to grow. I don't know if Jeff Dunlap has got a video on this or he's going to. If not, I'm gonna text him today where he needs to, because he used to do this, where guys can grow the worms and they can sell the worms. But more importantly, guys, this is a great business because you can double stack a function. The worm castings, which is a waste product from growing the worms, is very valuable to gardeners and people like that. And as things get worse, it's going to become more valuable. And as people are starting to figure out all the craziness with the stuff that our food's sprayed with, they're going to want it to be as natural as possible. So you could grow worms and sell worms. Then you can actually have the castings, which is just the waste product of the worms, which a garden will probably, you know, I mean, I wish I had like 25 tons of it right now to put on my farm. I mean, that's amazing stuff. But that's a way to double stack. Hops are becoming very popular. You know, think of that. I'm talking about long-term stuff here that you can regenerate from live systems that you're not constantly having to put money in like a standard business. Hops is becoming more and more prevalent in the East because people want to have beers that are grown with local hops. That's just the world you live in, whether you think it's stupid or not. That's the world we live in. Now, hops is a 25-year plant. You got to put them on 20 and 25-foot trellis poles to be able to harvest these things. You don't let them grow on the ground. They look like space aliens if you've never seen them. The big issue with the East, because we're humid, is they can't find poles that'll last 25 years to last with the plant. So what guys are starting to do is use black locust. Black locust you can grow from seed. You can buy thousands of black locust seedlings for not very much money. You go plant those out. In 5 to 10 years, as long as you keep them going straight with a set of pruners, it wouldn't take you probably 2 days a year to do this, you would have a ready-made business that you would have hops growers all over the Northeast, from New York, from the South, everywhere in between, coming to buy these poles. And they would be of great value to them, which means they're going to pay for them. So being creative in how we're doing things is how we as trappers figure out ways to get out of the craziness of the world that we have. Because if you've got a job now that's publicly owned, you better start figuring something out now. Because when the stock market corrects, it's going to get ugly. If you're in a business that supplies a business that's stock market owned, you better be figuring something out right now. And I'm not saying this to be all doom and gloom, guys. This is just the world that we live in. So we're going to have to figure it out. Truck farming, dude, there's a lot of money in that. And anybody that's a trapper can grow vegetables and sell them. I mean, they're not that hard. It's really not. Whether you do it chemically or non-chemically, people want locally grown produce. And you can, I mean, you off a half an acre, you can grow more than you'll ever want to see again, I promise you. If you get into stuff, go research Curtis Stone or Square Lasagna Gardening or Square Foot Gardening, stuff like that. Take care of your own future. Berries, I'm looking out my window right now, guys, at a row of blackberries that is 60 feet long. And every 3 feet, there's a new blackberry bush. So there's 20 blackberry plants in there. Every day, me and my wife come in and pick right now the value of half a day's wage of a normal person in a rural area off of that one row of blackberries. Now, selling those things is super easy. Now, we do things with them like make jellies and pies, and I eat them every single day that they're in season. So I'm not doing that. But on the farm, we're going to have about 10, 15 rows of that. You go look what blackberries cost. They're easy to grow. They're easy to self-propagate. So once you get a certain, I'll never have to buy more blackberry plants again off of that thing. I can extend that system to where I can have a revenue stream of probably, you know, $10,000, $15,000, and it all be done in a two-month time. Taking care of myself, and that's something that being outdoors and a trapper probably can get it, wrap their head around to start a business. That's super simple to do. You can research how to do it. When you're doing any type of products like what I'm talking about doing, figure out ways to value add. A black locust tree that's 25 feet tall doesn't really have any value unless it's for firewood and someone thinks their stove's not going to burn up from the heat because they're very hot burning. But you make poles out of them things and you market them to the hops people, you just added a ton of value to that. There's a lady in town in Dunlap, because I'm right behind me, I've got a full case of her chow chow. She charges $12 a piece for them things. She works in a local store that she doesn't own. She talked to the owner. Now she's selling chow chow, she's selling beets, all this stuff. She either grows some of it, she buys some stuff for me, then she cans it. She gets it from other people that grow it. She's turning over money left and right. She's value adding tomatoes and onions and stuff like that to do that. I'm growing a bunch of jalapeno peppers and ghost peppers for her right now, which I probably wouldn't grow in this volume anyway. They're already pre-sold to her because her product's already pre-sold to other people that want what she's going to be doing with this, pepper jellies and stuff like that. So think about value add. Now see, that stuff is not sexy the way that we mostly think of business. When you're an employee thinking of business, you have this what I call the big lick syndrome. If you can't make a big lick, and so you're not going to be Warren Buffett in 2 days after you start your business, it ain't worth your time. Well, you start growing some trees and some blueberries and some blackberries and you value add to them things, you'll soon start wondering, why am I going to work for 40 hours a week? That's life-changing stuff. Now, more importantly than you, if you've got children, you need to start teaching them how to think this way. Because as the world gets crazier, it's going to get a lot tougher. And we all want to think that it's always going to be the way that it is now, and it's not. So if you teach your kids to think this way, and they're already outdoor orientated anyway, that they can go right into this, you know, and they can start doing it now at 15 years old. Could you imagine having a kid that's 15 years old and is putting out blackberries and black walnut trees and stuff like that, and all of a sudden, you know, when he's 25 years old, he's making as much as a doctor? Bring home pay? Most of it cash? Hello? You want to have a strong family? That's how you do it right there. And if trappers were to start doing some more stuff like this, dude, I mean, it's just an amazing way to live and look at the world. But it's totally up to you. No one can make you do this. No one can get you off the couch to get you to do this. It's totally up to you. But as you see the world around you just going down like this funnel of insanity, there's nothing you're going to do. No matter how many posts you put on Facebook or Instagram or tweet or whatever you're doing, or your buddies get together and have these big massive bitch sessions at the other party or whatever that's going on, it's not going to change a single thing. So the only reason I'm bringing this up today, guys, is as crazy as it's getting. I mean, when they're going to start taxing robots, the world's gone mad because robots don't make money. Start thinking a little bit about your future besides just in the fun part of trapping, because when you take care of all the other stuff like I'm talking about, when you start getting the money issues where it's not that big of a problem, trapping becomes more fun, and that's the goal for everybody. So just think about it.
Systems to save you.